Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my name's Jess Phillips and this is Yours Sincerely. I've always been a prolific letter writer, both the good and bad kind, and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I want to give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Jessica Fosterkew is a comedian, actor and writer. She's acted in TV shows including Motherland and Cuckoo for the BBC, and written for shows including Mock the Week and 8 out of 10 Cats. She currently hosts the Hoovering podcast and is going on tour across the UK this summer. Today I'm excited to talk to her about the letters she would send to three people who mean the world to her. So, hello Jess, how are you?
I'm very well, Jess, how are you?
Oh, it's like, I love people called Jess. however, my mum and dad thought it was really original, I think. My nan was called Jess and they thought it was really original. But then in my class at school and in my year at school, literally everyone was called Jess or Amy, so it wasn't particularly original.
Oh, really? There was only one other Jess in my whole school.
Like, in my six best friends group, like, there's six or seven of us, and there's two Jesses and two Amys. It's just people born in, like, 1979 to 1982 were called Jess or Amy, I think.
Right, so I was a bit behind the curve there. I was born in 1983 and I was surrounded by Kellys and Sarahs.
Yeah, Kelly was a big one.
Big one.
People don't get called Kelly anymore, do they?
No. No.
Garys. No, Garys. There were loads of Garys when I was at school. Yeah. There's no Garys anymore.
I know. My stepdad's called Gary and my dad's called Keith, and I feel like they're both representing the dying name.
If you were to look at last year's baby names, not a single one of them would be Gary or Keith. I bet there's no... I met a woman who had a baby Alan. I was like, what? Baby called Alan.
That's my uncle. You can't do it. You can't have a baby uncle. Well, you can actually, can't you? I mean, yeah.
My mate is currently pregnant and she doesn't know the sex of her baby. So they were trying to come up with like gender neutral names. And she's married to an Irishman. And he suggested Pat. Like not even Patrick, just Pat. And she was like, that's fine if it's a boy, but you can't have a... Pat is an Emmy Verante, Auntie Pat. Like, you can't have a girl baby called Pat. It's the name of an 80-year-old woman.
Yeah, with big earrings.
Yeah.
Pat.
Brilliant. Baby Pat.
Aww.
Well, anyway, it's nice to be with another Jess, even though we're actually quite common, I'm afraid to tell you. So this podcast is all about letter writing. Are you much of a letter writer?
I love writing letters. I don't do it as much as I should anymore. Like, I try really hard to keep my hand in with it. I've got a group of friends who we make an effort to do postcards still.
Yeah, that's good.
I feel like the last person I know left who sends Christmas cards. I don't put like a whole how my family's doing. Robin, noting it. I don't mind if that goes extinct. Yeah. And although my family were never pushed enough to do that, but I'm aware of it as a thing.
Yeah, my parents would have had to have been like, Luke's been in trouble with the law again.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Jess has been arrested again. Only once, actually. I love writing letters. I don't do it as often, but I don't never do it. I've got like a few family members who actually, I think we've sort of quietly established that's how we're best at communicating, actually.
My house has just turned into Piccadilly Circus, by the way. So the doorbell is ringing. There's about to be a drum lesson that starts. So just try and ignore the general life that goes on in my home.
No problem. We might get interrupted by a six-year-old at any point.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's much better than when you get interrupted by a 16-year-old. The other day I was doing this and he was just like, oh, I need bus fare, like repeating like that.
Well, I hope that makes the edit.
Get out. It's like, I haven't got any money for food. I need to go to the chicken shop.
Get out, yours sincerely, Mark.
Yeah. Fuck off, Harry. That's how I'd sign off a letter to you. Fuck off. Obviously, I love him dearly. do you have any letters of real note, like from like anyone really special, or a letter that like changed your life, like the letter that got you into university or like got your first gig or whatever?
I've got letters that I will never ever throw away. That were from, like, early loves. I think that ages me as well, just the fact that we would even do that, you know, wrote each other letters. I was so head over heels in love, but in denial about it with a boy when I was 18 and went off to uni, and he went off travelling instead. And, we were both so grown up about it. We were like, well, there's no point trying to do something long distance with children. We've got our whole lives to live. But I got to uni, I was like, boo! Just cried for months. Missed him so much. And we exchanged letters. He was in Israel in a kibbutz. And we
wrote that is that was they, so of that time to go to
yeah,
Israel.
Yeah, oh, so of that time. Those letters are pretty sort of full of, woman on the edge. letters that changed my life. No, I had a funny thing happen when I was 10 when D. Ream released the song
Things Can Only Get Better.
And I was a member of the I'm so glad I'm not on this podcast looking for love. I was a member of the D. Ream fan club. Like, fully paid up.
First of all, we're going to have to explain to some people maybe who are listening to this, is that there used to be like official fan clubs where you would send in like tokens and money and things and get like official newsletters and things. Like that doesn't, I don't think that exists anymore. I'm just going to float the idea. Were you the only member of the D-Ream?
No, and I can tell you why I know I wasn't the only member, because I saved my pocket money up to send cash in an envelope to become a member. And I opted into the D-Ream fan club pen pal scheme.
This is the best story anyone has ever told about the letters.
Okay, great.
You're winning.
I was accidentally put in an older age bracket group of pen pals, and I got lots of letters from really horny 16-year-olds. 15 to 20 year olds who had a big old stunk on for D-Ream and loved them in a quite a different way to me, and had much less innocent thoughts about D-Ream that they wanted to share. And I think a parent found these letters that I'd been getting from potential pen pals. And I mean, these days that would be very, you'd be in deep trouble. You'd be ringing up D-Ream fan club going, how the hell have you got this 10 year olds to dress on a database? Well, yeah, so that was a nightmare, but at least I know from the letters I wasn't the only one in the club.
Have you ever met any of the members of D-Ream and told them this story? You should. I mean,
no, I know, and I should probably tap them up on social media now.
You almost certainly could.
And be like, guys, things didn't get better.
Things got questionable safeguarding concerns.
Yeah, yeah. Things got handled badly when it comes to data protection. Yeah, 100%.
That's like before like chat boards, like on the internet. Even before that, you were in a specific D-Ream.
Pen pal group.
That is amazing. I cannot believe that such a thing existed. And yet here you are.
Yeah.
With the battle scars of the D-Ream.
A living survivor. The D-Ream fan club.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Great stuff, yeah.
So that's literally the best letter of note that I've ever heard.
It's Thank you.
Slightly porny.
Yeah.
Brilliant letters about Brian Cox. Mm. What was the name of the lead singer of D-Ream?
I can't remember that.
As if you can't remember?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm not sure I ever knew. I just like the one song and the one it's desperate for any sort of friends.
It was really like, it was beloved, that song.
Mm.
It was like everywhere. It was everywhere. Yeah. And then do you feel that Tony Blair sort of ruined it?
Well, it's questionable, isn't it? At the time, I was a big Tony fan too.
I'm so,
yeah.
I mean, I am a Tony first album fan.
Yeah. Big, I like the old
great first album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And every now and again, you know, can still release the occasional banger.
Yeah.
In amongst the noise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Tony Blair would definitely be delighted to hear us talking about him. Can I just say, on this podcast, he comes up more than anybody else.
Oh, no, that's Tony annoying, Blair, isn't it?
Tony Blair is literally... It's because I get letters from him. I get Christmas cards from him.
Yes!
And they're always like him, like, and his family.
Yeah.
And so they get mentioned a lot. Also, Lorraine Kelly had a letter from him framed on her wall that was sent to her daughter about dog mess. In, like, Aberdeen. Or Dundee, or wherever it was she lived.
Really
brilliant.
Good.
Yeah, brilliant. So, the whole point of this is to celebrate people who you would write a letter to. So, I've asked you to think of somebody who means the world to you first. So, who would you pick?
I've picked my six-year-old.
Oh, that's nice. People rarely pick their children.
The problem is, I think I do swing too far that way in life. Like, he's six now, but as a toddler, I really rang him dry in terms of stand-up comedy material. Yeah. He was a thug and would occasionally come up with some accidental sexism, and I really rinsed it. And I'm trying to... and I think I'm the opposite of the parent that would brag about their kid or put in a round robin. Do you know what I mean? It makes my skin crawl. When I was looking around schools, and I'm talking, you know, big comprehensive schools in South East London where I live, I overheard a parent at the end of a look around one of these schools say to the head teacher in front of all these other parents, "I want to know how you're going to cope if it turns out my child is extremely academically gifted." I've never wished a thicker child on anyone in my life. I felt such a visceral hatred, but actually, I swing too far that way. Do you know what I mean? And I thought this is a lovely opportunity because I can't
say
nice
things.
Yeah, and I thought I actually can't think of anyone else, you know, that I have such a. That's almost part of the problem with the love you have for your kids is that there is the unconditional. Enormity of it. It's overwhelming. It makes you feel sick sometimes how much I love him on. It's like, you know, I think it's like a pet, isn't it? Sometimes you want to squeeze them so much, like,
well,
burst them.
Bite my children when they were babies because, like, I genuinely felt like I couldn't get close enough to them.
Yes.
And so, like, there is like a carnal thing that happens.
Yeah.
That when I was cuddling them, I just like tug on their skin because, like, I was like, "Oh God, I just love you so much! Like, I'm gonna just kill you with love."
Yeah, it is
weird.
I feel you. I hear you. So that's why he's getting letter number one.
So what's his name?
Rudy.
Rudy, great name.
Yeah, thank you.
That's gender neutral. I know a little girl called Rudy. There you go. In fact, it's. Do you play that song? Rudy,
tune.
So tell me about your son then. He's six.
Yeah, he's six. I think he's a handful. I don't think he's perfect, but I want him to be curious and kind and grateful. But that's literally it, ambition-wise, for me, for him. Mm-hmm. Those are the three things I demand of him as a personality.
Yeah, somebody once said to me that, like, lots of people, like, the common refrain is, "I just want my kids to be happy." That actually, that puts a huge amount of pressure on your kids to just
agree.
Be happy.
I agree, I think it's a tough old world out there. Yeah,
and mine is just, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
That's it. I think that's fundamentally it, just don't be a dick.
I think yours is the same as mine, but succinct. Yours has been well script edited.
Yeah, indeed.
He's funny and wild and bright and at times really insightful. He's brave and strong. I think he's nothing I expected. I hoped for a stagnant, gentle, quiet child. And I've got this ball of fire with all my temper. I've only got myself to blame for the ways in which he's annoying. And I think, I don't want him to know this yet. He can listen when he's older, but I'm secretly grateful that he's not a pushover and he's full of his own ideas. I love how hard he tries at things. I love his attitude to losing. We're working on his attitude to winning.
Yeah, bad winners. Yeah, bad winners.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I love how good he is with younger kids and animals. He's not. He's rare, I think, in the sense he doesn't just idolise or iconise. Is that a word? Older kids and the kind of the school celebrity. He's up for the hanging with the underdogs. I really long may that last. And I thought it's so funny that it tickled me, this opportunity to do this here, because Adele had a chance to... I'm not with Rudy's dad anymore. And Adele had the chance to do sort of an international award-winning anthem song as an apology to her son for leaving her son's dad. And I thought I'd just do this letter and that would be probably that's sort of like the profile-wise the equivalent.
Basically the same.
Yeah, it's the same. I think, if he listened to this when he's older, every now and again he asked me, we've sort of explained, I don't want to over-explain at this point, but I just want him to know, and I think a letter's a lovely way of doing it, that I left his dad because I knew that we would never break up when it came to being a team that parent him. We're always going to do that together. And I did it for my sanity and ultimately so that I would be a happy enough person to be the best possible parent to him. Well, and I want him to know that.
Happy mums, and I spend a huge amount of time with people who break up with people for very, very difficult and horrible reasons.
Yeah.
And trying to get, for example, social services to change their attitudes towards women who end up in domestic abuse situations is that, if you don't, you can't shout at them about the harm that they're putting themselves in the way of, because they're not putting themselves in the way of it. It's happening to them. They're not active in it. And I always just say, happy mums make happy babies. So maybe you should try and make them happy when you interact with them, not sad. And so, happy mums make happy babies and happy dads make happy babies that. It's very easy to forget that when, your love for your child becomes all-consuming, as if their needs are the most important thing. Lots of people can forget about their own needs. And that is, I used to say to my kids, we are a square. We each get a corner in our family and no corner matters more than the other. You have to fit in with my life and I have to fit in with yours. But it's you do have to be happy.
Yeah. And ultimately, I think, especially when you're, kids are kids, your happiness and their happiness is, you can't really detach them.
You're only as happy as your saddest child.
Yes. Oh, crumbs.
Oh, that's sad, isn't it? Yeah.
It is bleak, but it's heavy. But this stuff is heavy, I think. Yeah. And ultimately, I was at a point where I was like, I'm unsavourably unhappy in this relationship without any of the horror you've described. Mm. It just... The relationship had become not even a friendship. The only thing we did well together was parent him. And there wasn't any reason why we wouldn't and haven't. We've carried on doing that as a team. So,
and do you
find
that that is really you have a healthy team relationship separate?
Amazing.
Yeah, my brother split up with his missus and they have two small kids together. And all of the resentments between them and the sort of guilt that they were having to live with for treating each other a certain way, that all just went out the window and they're just a team. They're a solid team together now that they're not together.
I have to... He wouldn't forgive me if I hadn't made it clear. It wasn't... He would have rather stayed in the relationship. Mm. So it's not like it was it was that amicable that we both just went, let's do it differently. But he's been incredibly classy. He's a brilliant dad. And... there is that. All the things that used to drive me up the wall just don't. We've got so much more in the tank when it comes to tolerance, patience, empathy for one another as co-parents and friends than we'd had for many years.
I reckon your kid will understand that.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing with him is he's at an age now where my kind of the annoying ferocity of my love is too much room. I'll walk into a room and be like, hey. And he'd be like, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say I love you. And I'm sick of hearing it. You say it too much. At one point, I think he even said to me, it's losing its meaning. I was like, Jesus. And I am a bit needy, and I thought that one of the things that's joyful about a letter is you can just go, oh, I love you so much, I love you, love. And there's nothing you can do about it. I love you so much, I'm going to squeeze you up. I'm going to embarrass you of how much I love you, I'm going to make you give me a kiss goodbye at school until you're 18.
How do you think you'll get... So I'm here to warn you as somebody who has come out the other side. I have a nearly 17-year-old and a 13-year-old boy, and they disappear for a bit. They go away. My older son has come back, and he will cuddle me, and he will lie with me on the sofa, and he will, like, he's like, Mom, do you want to go and see, I know you want to see this film, do you want to go and see it with me? Like, he's come back, but he disappeared for about 3 years, and, like, he wouldn't let me touch him, or, like, you just had no relationship with him. And he wasn't badly behaved, but he just disappeared, and that's painful.
It's going to hurt. It's going to feel like a poker. Hot poker to the soul. I'm not going to lie. I understand it's a really necessary part of adolescence. It's really integral part of the psychology of, isn't it all to do with, like, breaking bonds, ready to not live with me forever? So it needs to happen. Like, I fully get it, but I'm not going to pretend. I'm going to enjoy a single second. If anything, it's going to make me needier and more annoying.
Yeah, that's what he did to me. Yeah. I would be like, I'd like pour at him, like, at the dinner table when he sat next to me. I was like really, like, intolerable. No wonder he had disappeared, because I was just like, but you're my baby.
An idiot.
That is. They do go away. My 13-year-old hasn't done it yet. He must be due to go soon. He doesn't he won't cuddle me and kiss me properly. It's always like a stupid show when he does it. My older one, he will properly, like, cuddle up to me again. And yeah, that's nice. I don't ever want to lose that. And I tell him I love him, literally. And he says, I love you too. But I do it 30, 40 times a day.
Yeah. I love to hear it. I feel like I'm really, that's exactly my vibe. I've said vibe.
It's just like, I just really love them. It's sort of terrifying when they're first born, though, isn't it? Because, like, I just was like, oh my God, like, I've just got to make sure you don't die. And when people say that, like, you feel like this unbelievable love, I actually just had never felt actual fear before I had a baby. Like, I thought I'd been in frightening situations, but I literally lived my whole life in total fear for those first few months. I was like that, oh my God, what if I hurt him?
Yeah, but also there's this absolutely ridiculous assumption that you'll innately work out what to do. It blew my mind. I had stand-up about it at the time. They basically, you go through an inevitably a trauma, and then they basically pop a hat on it and send you home. Don't they? And you're like, what? Sorry, what?
So, like, 4 hours after they're born sometimes. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Excuse me? Who's that? Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't feel, with my second one, I didn't feel like a burst of love with my first one. I did with my second one, because I had the synapses in my brain, because I'd done it before.
Yes.
But I didn't love my son like that. He felt like an alien.
People are honest about that. That's like basically 50-50 whether you're going to get all that straight away.
Especially like when you've just, you know, when I'm dragged out of you with big salad servers.
Yeah, same.
I was like that. They just look like huge salad servers, forceps.
Terrific.
So do you think you'll have more children then, or...?
I'm not ruling it out, but I'm not sure. And I'm engaged to a woman now, so if we do have more kids, one, it will be more complicated. Two, maybe she's younger.
Yes.
Do it. And I can be a dad, because that looks like a pretty sweet ride. I'll see you down the golf course, lad.
When I had my son, you know, they give you a talk about contraception afterwards, and, like, you know, you won't necessarily be fertile. Well, first stage is it'll be better. And so it's obviously like just like paint by numbers. They have to go through the sheet before they let you out of the hospital and say that to you, like, oh, what are you going to use for contraception? And they did it to two women in the next cubicle to me. So they were like, well, we're lesbians, so I think it's unlikely that we're going to accidentally fall pregnant. But yeah. Like, I've got to say it. Have you got plans for contraception?
You haven't got to say it. It turns out, actually, you haven't got to say it.
Say it.
Oh, my crumbs. Yeah, blimmin' it.
I think it must be hard, actually. I mean, just because I fell pregnant accidentally with my first baby, and then I wanted to have my second one, so I sort of planned it, but I was, like, already in the sort of mom sphere. But, you know, like, when people have to have IVF, or, like, when gay people want to have a baby, like, that moment where you have to... It's like making a decision. Like, I think that's quite... Yeah. To me, that seems alien, the idea of making a decision to go through the process of having a baby. Like, seems yeah. like you might just keep kicking the can.
Yeah, totally.
The arse, actually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, 100%. Really, there was a sweet spot for me in terms of, like, at some point, I think it was in my late 20s, I began to go mad about wanting a baby. And I sort of repressed it until it was going to destroy me if I didn't have a baby, and then had a baby. Yeah. But it was quite, I was very overwhelmed. So I did plan, I planned Rudy, but I think unless you've, part of me thinks if you've got two women both in that madness, then they'll find a way.
When I, because I wanted to have my second one, I was 26 when I had Danny, so my second one, I was 23 when I had Harry. I wanted to have a baby so much, I was driven literally mad. Like, I was like, my friend said she was pregnant. I was like, right, Tom, that's it. We're having a baby. Like, I've got to have a baby. It was the most genuinely, like, it took over my whole body, like, insane sense. And I was, like, making him have sex with me, like, all the time. Like, he literally recorded... Robert Winston on the television saying, literally, there's like one day you can actually get pregnant. He was like, you've got to stop.
Please give me a rest.
I got pregnant in the first month of trying because I was 26 years old.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, well, it was not going to be that difficult. And I'd already had another baby. So I got pregnant within the first, like, week of trying to get
pregnant.
Amazing. But still, I was just like, it was just, I was so incessant. There was no reason for me to think, have any doubts about whether I'd be able to have a baby or anything, but I was still totally overwrought. Like,
no, me too. I was exactly the same. I was so annoying for years, and because he was like, not yet, not yet. And I was like, tell me exactly when we're ready then. Like, and I remember at one point, the point where I knew I'd lost my mind was we were watching a documentary about these massive crabs, I think, in Japan, and they were like scuttling along a beach. And I was like, I saw a baby move sideways once. You've lost it. You've fully lost it. I can't believe that's made you think about babies. A massive, gross crab, like this, like a metre wide crab on a Japanese beach.
It is like maddening. Yeah. Like, so it must be mad. So hard for people who struggle to get pregnant.
Oh, my crumbs,
to be around. Oh, I mean, I just like that must be so hard, like, and I didn't. I used to think that people were a bit moany about it until I had that feeling, and I thought that you'd be like clawing away at your own skin.
Yeah,
like
100%. But like you say, once your system is rid of that, and you're left with the sort of rational amount of wanting or not wanting a child, really easy to kick that can. Keep kicking that can.
Oh yeah, we've got this one. He's a nice one.
That one's fine. That one's. Yeah.
I like the way people say we should have another one so that they've got a brother and sister. It's just like, is your second baby just a toy? Your first baby, like, that's a really weird attitude to have. Like, well, he needs a brother or sister. It's just like, buy him a fucking ball.
Or you could teach him to share if you want.
The idea as well that only children, and this definitely in the 80s, this was definitely the sort of patter that only children were basically the devil. Like,
and
in
I'm
all
one
literature.
And I'm an 80s one. So I was like,
in all literature, it's like, you know, the sort of perfect only child who can't share and she's really spoilt. Like, all the only children I know are considerably less maladjusted than the people who have siblings.
Well, it does feel a bit 50-50. I've got loads of people who would, you know, kill and die for their siblings, and I got loads of people who really do not get on with their siblings,
who had
a terrible 20 years and now they're friends or something.
We don't have the same upbringing, me and my siblings, like, because of each other, like, the dynamics of each other. I've got three brothers. It's crackers the way that, like, people think that the answer is to have siblings. It's like, it's no, like, moral... It's really weird. All like, have one baby, two's too many. That was how I experienced it. I was like, after having that desperation, I was a bit like, what was I thinking? This is so much harder. But obviously, I like them now. So what? How would you sign off a letter to Rudy?
He once said something to me when he was a toddler, so maybe I will say that back to him. He was really violent as a kid, as a baby and toddler, to the point where it was funny, but it was also genuinely really awful in my real life. Once I thought he'd said something sweet, and then he made it violent, and it really tickled me. And he went, "Anna, I love you so much, I want to squeeze you up." And I went, "Oh, thank you." And he went, "I'm going to squeeze you so hard that it smashes you up to silhouines." So I'm going to say that. I'm going to say, "I'm going to love you so hard, I'm going to smash you up to silhouines." Whatever silhouines are. Love, Mum.
Smithereens.
Yeah. He called them silhouines.
That is, those things stick forever. Was it my children? And we've stayed, it's like stayed in the folklore of our family. Oh, on accident, they say, because like you say on purpose.
Yeah.
So we all now have adopted saying, "Oh, I did it on accident."
I did it on accident. Yeah, and you find yourself saying it in adult company.
Absolutely, don't realise it.
I think that's weird. I don't think that woman knows how to say it on accident.
They infect your whole sense of being because you're so chuffed at the cute things that they say. And that gets better, I have to say, as they get older. They... especially when they're trying on being adults, it is so fucking amusing. Yeah. It's genuinely like a laugh a minute. So there's plenty more in that rich scene for stand-up. There's so much more to come. So the second letter I asked was for somebody who's no longer with you, so who would that be?
I chose my Nana Foster Q.
Oh, Nana Foster Q. Where is the name Foster Q from? I've never met another Foster Q in my life.
So she is Austrian, but it was from my granddad. So it's an old English name, boring old Anglo-Saxon name that means strong sword or strong shield. Oh. There's a few others I know because a man approached me at the Edinburgh Festival with a family tree he'd made.
That's weird.
And it didn't have my dad's other kids on it. So it was, it was a very sweet thing to do. And he's obviously done a lot of research. But there aren't loads of us. It is a weird one. I think there's lots of, there's more Fortescues, which it gets mistaken for.
Oh, yes, Fortescue. No, I've heard that. Fortescue, it's a pop person's name, that is.
Yeah, it's not. I don't think if. Well, I mean, my granddad isn't posh.
there you go.
So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I called myself posh adjacent. My nan was Austrian, and yeah, she's no longer with us. She was an extraordinary woman. You know, again, not perfect, but I think I have so many regrets in the sense that she died when I was in my very early 20s, I think. And I didn't take it seriously, I don't think. I didn't grieve her. I didn't have the emotional maturity to care enough. And I was even too cowardly to go to her funeral. I had planned...
Really?
I'd driven... I think so. That side of my family aren't very good at feeling their feelings. Mm. My dad is still 100% incapable of it. And I have done enough work on myself to grow into somebody who can do that and who doesn't need to numb their emotions with any of the many ways in which people numb their emotions. However, that at that age, I couldn't bear it. I couldn't bear the thought of it. And I'd promised some friends I was supposed to drive them all on a holiday that we had planned. And I seemed to justify it along with my dad of like, she wouldn't have wanted you to waste all those people's money and that's all of their chance for a holiday and stuff. And it was like, oh, really? Okay, well, just go on the holiday then. And even once I'd gone on the holiday, I was like, what am I doing? And I remember on the day of her funeral, went and sat in a church, even though I'm completely agnostic, and sat in a church all day trying to feel feelings. And just nothing, just not ready to compute anything. And I knew immediately I'd made a terrible mistake with that. We were really close, her and I.
And she died in your 20s. It's not like, you know, old people dying when you're like 8 and play the role of like, I'm sad for you, Dad, I hope you're all right.
Exactly. And I'm sure she was super flawed as a parent, but she was an amazing grandparent. Once my son was born, I got a really big... That's when I grieved her. And I still feel like I can feel someone tugging at the cords of me every time I think about how much I would have loved her to have met him.
Yeah.
And she would have been so... She was the naughtiest woman. She was really clever. She was, extraordinarily beautiful and cheeky, farty, like this most glamorous, stunning, like black eyes, black curly hair, but never not squeaking a little fart out. She would have loved how naughty he is. She'd have loved what little shit he is.
Yeah.
And how much he eats, she'd have loved that.
I'm in a room that has a plastic roof and it's raining really badly. Oh, it's just passed. It's all right. Okay. It's passing.
I'm just glad you're not wetting yourself.
I'm not wetting myself.
I'm
in the conservatory and it's got a very cheap plastic roof.
She was Austrian. She was called Helinda. She was sneaky, cheeky. I had lots of very wholesome half terms with them. Like, when I went to their house for half terms, my parents were like, worked shifts as a nurse, my mum. My dad worked in London as a salesman and would be back at weekends. There wasn't like loads of consistency. I was very independent. And it was the 80s where you didn't interact with your kid like parents are required to now. I was an only child, say. I was very good with the adult company, but weird with other kids. And when I hang out with them for half terms, I would do cooking with her. I had all this creative freedom. There was a hatch. It was a proper 70s, 60s.
Oh, I love a hatch. I was just trying to convince my father-in-law to put one in. I was like,
get
I love a hatch.
Oh, I love a hatch.
It's so 80s to have a hatch.
Oh, I'm into a hatch. I used to be allowed to set up a pretend shop through the hatch.
A hatch was good for.
Yeah, make place shops through the hatch. She taught me loads of amazing Austrian cooking.
Did she cook Austrian food?
Yeah,
I love Austrian food.
Me too. Schnitzels and these amazing clear soups with broths with these like mad tasty dumplings and I'd be allowed to chop the chives or sometimes these really thinly cut slices of pancakes in these clear soups. Oh, yum. And I'd help with that. We'd go down into... They lived in Farnborough in Hampshire and we'd walk down every day to look at the bargains in the Esther. And every day buy a load of going off food and cook it up. Like, she was proper bargain hunter. She'd always be sleeping... Proper feeder. Like, that's 100%. She was, like, never not passing you something sweet or delicious to eat. She was... amazing. Also taught me all the capital cities of country.
I feel I've let my children down on that because, like, we used to be like quizzed on it, and my kids don't know flags. I mean,
yeah,
dreadful. No. I've let them down.
Yeah, totally. I remember some musicians had come into our school, and they were saying to the whole of we were in like primary school, and they said, "Does anybody know the capital city of Denmark?" And I was like, like it's the snazziest I'd ever felt. I've got a pull out of my hand. I felt like her. Well, I didn't know who Hermione was, but I had a real Hermione moment, thanks to her. Yeah.
I've got a brilliant Austrian-related story.
Have you?
It's about Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's from Austria.
Of course. He's a flipping ledge, isn't he?
Isn't he?
His little note to Putin, I could have smooched him.
Oh, no, what a ledge.
Lovely boy.
When he made The Terminator, they obviously dubbed it into German for the German audience. Lovely. And he said, how about I do the... I'll dub myself, like, you know, I'll do the voice. Because obviously I speak German, so I'll do it. He volunteered to do it. And the Germans sort of quite politely had to say to him, well, the trouble is that Austrian people to us sound like farmers. So it won't be very menacing.
Oh, my God. Wurzel Gummidge does Terminator.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
So they didn't let him do the dubbing into German.
Oh, my God, that's also so rude, isn't it? I think if I was... I've almost commend the Germans for having the absolute nips to say that to Arnie, of all the hench bastards as well, say that to. I'd have been like, yes, go for it, Arnold, and then just combined his back and booked a second voiceover artist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
But isn't that brilliant? I hope it's true, that story. My husband told me that, and he does periodically lie to me so that I repeat things on here that aren't true. I hope that's true. But
a celebrity-related story that I desperately hope is true is someone told me once that apparently Bill Murray's got this thing he does where he goes round, like, you know, with sunglasses on or whatever, like, you know, be out and about, and he'll go up behind someone and he'll put his hands over their eyes so that they're like, whoa, like that, and they'll turn round and they'll see it's him, and then he goes, "No one will ever believe you," and then walks off. If that is true, that is amazing.
What, I mean, you can believe it there, can't you?
Yeah, because you can.
Bill Murray is the ultimate legend.
Yeah.
Him and Arnie.
Yeah, him and
Arnie. They should be able to rule the world. Yeah. The world would be a better place if they ruled it. Although in Germany, they'd think it was being ruled by a farmer.
Glorious.
Oh, I love that. So how would you sign off a letter to your nana?
Yeah, I say, I wish I'd thought about you more when you went. I think about you all the time now, even though it hurts to. I miss you. You were brilliant, Jess.
I think she knows.
I don't know.
She probably...
She was quite sure of herself, I think. I think if she wanted something, she worked away again.
She didn't need the constant affirmation. We'll be back for Jessica's final letter after a short break.
Ever yearned for the perfect pub to reveal itself from some unexpected alley? Well, The Moon Underwater is the podcast for you. Join me, John Robbins, and the lovely Robin Allender.
Hi.
As we help a special guest create their dream pub. From the drinks behind the bar to the music on the jukebox, The Moon Underwater is whatever you want it to be. So, if you would like to join us in Desire's beating heart, search The Moon Underwater. Or maybe The Moon Underwater will search for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the final letter is to somebody who has had an effect on your life, but they probably don't know that they have. So who would that be to?
This is a random one. I did have a think about, like, you know, famous people or, like, people in comedy. But I really toyed with saying someone like Caroline Ahern or Rick Mayall or one of the people whose humour or physicality I feel like is in my DNA. Like, and I don't know that I'd have... I don't know. But
Rick Mayall, especially for our generation, like, you're right, he was just like everything. My husband was saying earlier that his nan had named their cat Toffee and he'd wanted to call it Vivian after the character from The Young One.
Yes.
And it was just like they were the sort of irreverency of the 1980s.
Yeah.
So good.
And then they took that into Bottom and all of that slapstick. Yeah, and I think Caroline Ahern as well. I mean, there's so many, but then I thought, I don't know where to start. I don't know where to start with those. I've gone for someone from real life. I'm going for a man who will be exactly my age, pretty much, called William Spickett, who I haven't
seen. Sounds like a character from Dickens.
It sounds like a kind man from a Dickens novel.
It does.
And instead he is, I assume, I can't see a world in which he's anything other than a kind man from the real world. But I haven't seen him
since I was 12 or 13. Not to talk to. But he was... I was a dweeb at school. And I think now, like, again, like, to hammer home a point I made earlier, like, the pressures were different on parents in the 80s and before. And, like, now, I think when I knew... I think from early days anyway, but I was like, I want to get my kid around other kids. There's a chance this might be my only kid. I'm going to get my kid around other kids. And that just wasn't what it was like then. And so when I got to school, I was adrift. Like, I did not, like, have any friends. And I was a dweeb. And I don't know, I wasn't very good at it. I wasn't very good at making friends. I think I tried to do some aggressive kind of... some really overzealous like bullying, like to try and like save. I remember saving this boy who was having his head shoved through a bit of a playground equipment and like his face being pushed into the floor. I remember like basically kicking the bullies off him and being like, would you like to be my friend? And him being like, no, and don't do that again for me. Like, you're a girl and I'm embarrassed. Jesus. I can remember he had really big shaggy hair. I can't remember his name. Anyway, like, I had nothing until William Spickett, and then he became my one friend. And I don't think until... we got to puberty and I ditched him, but until...
Did you stop being a dweeb then? Did you blossom?
Stopped like being a dweeb, and I wanted to...
In drama where the girl just takes off her glasses and is actually an absolute knockout.
I did not blossom. I look at pictures of me as a teenager now, and I think lots of people look at them and go, oh my God, I can't believe I hated myself. I look at pictures of me as a teenager and go, fuck that. What was your face doing? Who the hell was that? I was the wonkiest... I was a donkey.
With age.
Me too. I'm the fittest I've ever been. I honestly was a minger as a teenager. I wouldn't have got off of me. Everything's all sort of twisted around and like I look like a weird painting. Like, and then I looked bizarre as a teenager.
Why did you ditch Spickett?
I ditched Spickett, I think, because I was ready to get some snogs off naughty boys. And he was very wholesome, innocent, lovely boy, and we'd even do up each other's coats. We hung out all day, every day. I can't remember any of the things we talked about. I remember having amazing... His parents ran, it doesn't exist anymore, but a little like a grocery shop, and I'd go for after school to his for tea, and it was a much more like a nourishing, routine, sweet, normal environment, less chaotic, more predictable environment than my home, and I loved the sanctuary of that. It felt like going to a theme park, visiting somewhere that sort of quiet and normal and homely. And the best bit about it was we'd have like whatever we'd have for tea, some kind of kids' tea of chips and fish fingers or whatever. But for pudding, even though, well, obviously because the shop was closed, we were allowed into the closed shop.
Oh my God.
To choose an ice cream from the ice cream cabinet for pudding, Jess.
That is that's literally like a dream. You know, you should like dream of getting like locked in a department store.
Yeah. Well, mine night. Would be in a sweet in the it was in a grocery store. It was incredible. I remember having my first Mars bar ice cream. Oh. I remember having my first I'd choose a Fab. They were like Zap. I mean a Zap. It's like a toffee flavoured ice cream that looked like sick.
Yeah, it was all like tie-dye.
Yeah. Yeah. That was about as 80s as it got. Like a really ugly, fugly ice cream that tasted just of toffees. Yeah. Oh, that was so fun. That was so fun. Lovely William. And I don't know anything about, like, his situation. I'm aware, I think his parents still live, like, back where I'm from, where my parents also still do. I think he's got family, I think he's got kids. I don't know any more about him, but I love the idea that I'd love to have a cup of tea with him sometime, or maybe even a pint. And just sit, because I mean, I don't know where we'd even start. But he saved me from an incredible amount of loneliness, and it had taken me even longer to be sort of not weird enough to make other friends. He really took a bullet. He was like, you know, to use a stand-up analogy, sometimes there is an audience that is like a flipping handful, like feral or not engaged with it, or just there like to... Blank. Sometimes you get really moody, like sassy audiences that are there to have a crap time. Like, and basically, whoever's on first takes a bullet. And he got the worst me. He got the raw first me, this weird little 4 or 5-year-old. And sort of made me normal enough to be able to move me on to other friends.
I bet he wasn't conscious of that at the time, and I bet he didn't feel like taking a bullet.
I hope not.
Did he have other friends?
Well, not while during our friendship that I was aware of, but then he did go on to have an amazing best friend called Nathan, I think, once we were all a bit older. Yeah.
So do you think that he feels that same way about you?
I've got no idea.
I imagine he does. No, if you were his only friend and he was your only friend, he probably is like chuffed that you were friends with him.
I feel bad that...
I mean, you didn't have a shop.
No, and Jess, I feel like there's a world in which he could hear this and get in touch and be like, I did have other friends. Thank you. I just made a bit of time for you, you dweeb. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, but you didn't have a shop. So, you know, he has got one up on the influencing you for the rest of your life and your memories because, you know, being able to look around a shop is...
Yeah.
That's, like, literally the dream of any child.
The absolute dream.
So, I reckon he was... as pleased to have you. People often do this. They are willing to accept how great other people are in their lives, but find it much more difficult to accept that they might be great in theirs. Like your son, Rudy, one day, I mean, it's a long time away.
Yeah.
He will sit and somebody will say, who means the world to you? And he will say that it's you. Like, and you cannot foresee that at the moment, and you also cannot accept it. You can't, like, you know, like, my children now, like, they just take the piss out of me. But one day, I think they'll go, shit, you know, my mum, she's quite an impressive person. And
I don't doubt it.
Yeah,
surely.
I mean, surely. Come on, I've really put the fucking yards in. You can't accept it in other people that other people feel that way about you, the way that
you feel. Unbearable. It's like an unbearable compliment, isn't it? Like,
it is awful. It's like a real problem of the human condition, that, though, is to assume that if anybody else does something brilliant, that's because they're brilliant and brave. Whereas when you do it, you're like, oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it.
I got lucky.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's also bad feminism, isn't it? We need to work on that.
Yeah, it's like... I'm just so aware I meet amazing people who go, oh, it's nothing really. And I'm like, well, you know, you liberated Liberia. So.
Yeah, I bet you do. You meet actually amazing people as well. I love it.
I am sort of like, well, I think that Nobel Peace Prize probably is different. I've mentioned this on this podcast before, I once had to lecture Malala Yousafzai on political activism.
Oh, God. Oh, my crumbs. I love it.
I mean, that's embarrassing, isn't it? When you have to go into your constituency schools and lecture people and she's one of the people in the class.
Incredible.
Yeah, I felt like I wasn't that lucky that day. She was very gracious about it, I must say, for the record.
Brilliant.
So, William Spickett, the greatest name ever. How would you sign off your letter to him?
Thank you for your pity. I hope you enjoyed that friendship too. I'd have been a lot more lost without your friendship as a tiny child. Thank you for it. Thanks for helping me do up my coat, that one with the toggles I couldn't work. Thank you to your parents, please. I hope they're doing well for the ice creams and the nice times. And I really hope everything's doing great. And if you want to write back, get in touch.
We'd
have a lovely cup of tea, even if it turns out to be one of those things where we meet up again once
and it's awkward.
And we never do it again. I think it's a good idea.
Well, Jess, it has been a total pleasure listening to your people. It has been, as I expected, a hoot.
Thank you for having me. What a brilliant podcast, Jess. This is so cool. It's a treat to have to think about these things.
I know, it's a treat for people. That's it. Yeah. That's the thing. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you follow Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips on the podcast provider of your choice. And why not write a letter to your friends telling them all about this podcast? You could also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.